As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Welcome to this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm your host, David Mooney. I'm joined by The Athletic City correspondent, Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Yeah, hello.
Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription, and you'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all the podcasts, too. So go to theathletic.com/mancitypod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/mancitypod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review as well. So Sam, it had to end at some point, didn't it, the winning run? It was almost signposted that it had to happen this weekend. The week where they're playing United, who have been hot and cold all season. United had just drawn with Crystal Palace and looked terrible. City needed one more game unbeaten to break a club record. It had to be this weekend, didn't it?
I suppose so. I mean, honestly, going into it, I did think City were going to win. I thought they would win. I thought different City. Obviously, United would won three games last season, but I was like, it's a different City now. Shouldn't be too much of a problem. Just barring kind of, I don't know, United pulling something out of the bag, really, which obviously they're capable of. And they did. United were actually really good. And I don't know. Yeah, in hindsight, it did look especially inevitable. But just the way that the game went was just so similar to the other times.
Everything that happened last season.
City dropped points. And yeah, and even earlier this season, like, we'll mention it. But it felt like the Spurs game and, yeah, last season with the Arsenal FA Cup semi-final, a bit of Lyon as well. Like, just one of those when you think, I don't care if there's 40 minutes left. They're not scoring here. And yeah, there we go. It's just a weird thing how that keeps happening.
Well, I want to get into that kind of ability to turn games around when things aren't going for you. And I think there's a kind of key difference to make here on how City do that, because I'm not talking about just falling behind. I'm talking about when City are playing badly and they fall behind and they're not able then to kind of dust themselves down, go again, and just make their performance just a step higher than it had been to start with. You think of some of the games. I mean, there's plenty games under Guardiola, City have conceded the first goal and gone on to win. That's not the issue here. It's the issue is that they are not playing well. And I mean, I saw you tweet near the end of the game. What was it? 4 added minutes, but you may as well add a week on. They're not scoring, and it's that sort of feeling.
Yeah, it is that kind of feeling. And like I said, I just don't know what it is. And it can't be. It's not as easy as it's every time they fall behind or it's every time they need a goal, because like the Villa game in January, when it was just that mad situation where it just felt like, oh, nothing's going City's way. And it was like, it's going to be one of those days kind of thing. But, they kept pushing and pushing and they got it. And I did remember thinking at the time, I was like, well, there is plenty of time left. I wouldn't be surprised if they got it. But it's just when they're behind in situations like this, I'm not sure how you'd quantify it. I'm not sure if it neatly fits into into a box. Like you say, there will be times when they have gone behind and they've won, and it's not been a problem, and they've just kind of picked themselves up and resumed. But yeah, like I've already mentioned a few examples just off the top of my head of games where you just think, no, the game's up. It's like Liverpool as well, I suppose, last season, you know, the 3-1 at Anfield in November, I think it was.
Yeah.
Just of games like that, you just think, yeah, like even at half time, obviously City had kind of, because they were just atrocious for like five minutes in particular. And then obviously they got it back, but I was like, I'm not convinced that they're on top enough to get the next goal. And I do think United seem quite happy. And obviously, as it turned out, United did get the second goal. And then, yeah, it was just the same old, this the same old thing where they have a lot of the ball, but they don't look particularly threatening. But then the mad thing about it is that's compounded by the fact that all of a sudden they do create chances, and then they just get missed. And it's that's a common thing anyway. Like we talked about that even during City's winning run, and Guardiola's talked about it, and everybody knows they're not as clinical as, I don't know whether you say should be or could be or whatever. Probably should be considering the quality, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, whether it's could or should, they're not clinical. And yeah, it doesn't matter most weeks because City create enough chances. They do obviously score enough goals, but maybe in games like this, when the whole kind of the confidence is rocked or whatever, or it's just true to form. If you give Sterling a chance 6 yards out, he might miss it, and so might Jesus. I mean, Jesus didn't really have too many opportunities actually on Sunday, as far as I remember. Sterling was the worst culprit for it, but it's always them two.
Yeah,
like it's always them two. And De Bruyne's conversion rate is worse than anyone's. You know, he's not normally the one inside the 6 yard box for all his faults yesterday, and God. he was bad.
We could get into that.
He did still create a couple of things that could have sparked something, but just didn't, because the finishing's just, it just happens out of nowhere as well. You think, oh, they've had a chance. Oh, they missed it.
Yeah. Yeah. The one, I think that there was a couple, certainly in the second half, it must have been after they'd gone 2-0 down, because the second goal came really early in the second half. But there was one where I just thought at that point, oh, it's not going to happen for anybody. And it's when it broke to De Bruyne on the edge of the box. And I can't remember if he took a touch, got it out of his feet. He was certainly hurried. It wasn't a kind of all the time in the world, pick your spot sort of chance. It was one of those, you've got to swing at it. And he swung at it, and it was nearer the corner flag than it was the goal. And you just thought, like, if he's doing that, then it just isn't going to happen. Let's look at two goal leads and City, because two goal deficits in City, I should say. The last time City in the Premier League came back from two goals down was Kevin Keegan's penultimate game. He won 3-2 at Norwich in 2005. Since then, United have done it 10 times, Tottenham have done it 5 times, Everton and Arsenal 3 times, West Ham, Reading, Fulham, Leicester, Aston Villa, Wolves, Wigan, Crystal Palace, QPR and Liverpool have done it twice, and Newcastle, Burnley, Bournemouth, Chelsea, Southampton and Watford have all done it once. There's been 47 occasions where a 2-0 lead has been turned around to be a 3-2 win. None of them have been City, because, as we say, City don't look like they're ever capable of getting back into games that they're doing like that. Four of them have been against City, and two of them have been against Guardiola's City, United in 2018 and Wolves last season. This isn't to say that City can't do it, because this is only Premier League games. In all competitions, City have come down back from two goals down, mainly under Pellegrini, but you know, Guardiola's City did it at Swansea that time in the FA Cup, albeit a bit fortuitously. Mancini's City did it against Sporting Lisbon. They were 2-0 down at home, came back to win 3-2. Okay, it wasn't enough. They still went out on the away goals rule. And then they did it, bizarrely, against Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich in 2013-14. So, this isn't a team that's incapable of doing it. It just feels so far away. As soon as that second goal goes in, it just feels so far away, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, I don't know. Is it just, one of those weird historical statistical quirks that, you know, for it to go back to Keegan, obviously there'll be an element of there's not been too many opportunities to do it, I guess, especially, you know, since...
Well, they take the lead most weeks, don't they? That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, we're not saying it's happening 5 times a season and they can never do it. But I don't know. I do feel like it's one of those weird quirks that, I don't know, can't be explained, because if it spans, you know, the mid-2000s era, where you wouldn't necessarily expect it to happen. You might expect it to happen. You know, you mentioned Wigan in there and Watford and whoever else. You might expect it to happen once. but you know, with the level of the team, maybe not too often. But you'd certainly expect it to happen over the last 10 years. And also, you've got the different types of teams. So you've got the team that wasn't necessarily, well, just wasn't challenging for trophies 15, nearly 20 years ago. But then you've got the team that have been challenging for trophies. But within that, you could also make the argument that Mancini's team was full of big characters, because that's something that, fortunately, we've not heard. I don't think I've heard in the fallout to the derby at the weekend. We've not heard the usual no leaders in the team debate, which normally happens. But if you were going to make that point, that there are no leaders in this Guardiola team and it all comes from the manager or whatever, you could maybe say, well, Mancini had a load of leaders and they still didn't do it. So yeah. Overall, I do think it's just a weird thing. When it comes to why this Guardiola team doesn't look like doing it, I don't. My theory, and I'm not sure how true this is, I do feel like this is the case. And I would have said it a lot last season, I think, when City was struggling. And obviously, it would be every 3 or 4 games they would drop points, wouldn't it, last season? But as we've seen recently in the last 3 months when everything's been so brilliant, and you know, in the 2 full seasons of winning titles, when everything comes together, you've got fantastic players in a fantastic system where Guardiola gives them all the solutions. He tells them which foot to receive the ball on. He tells them which way they need to face. He tells them when they need to play and how they need to play and who's going to be making the run. The players understand that. They do it. And it makes fantastic players look even better. So when there's this stuff over the weekend about, you know, City having the best squad in like the history of sport, it's like, and whenever you see the whole thing about, oh yeah, well, Guardiola had the best Barca ever, so is nobody making this link? Like, why do all these players that Guardiola has look good? Like, it's as simple as that, as far as I'm concerned. But that's it. So when everything's ticking along, you've got a combination of fantastic players knowing exactly what they're doing on the pitch, and that's why they've got 100 points, 98 points, and 90 plus probably this season. But I do think there is an element of when those ideas don't work, when that system isn't working, I don't know, it just seems like, yeah, the matrix is broken and everything is kind of unplugged. You know, there's a couple of cogs taken out, the machine doesn't work. And, you know, last season at least, it was easy to spot because they were like, right, well, we don't know what we're doing here, so we're just going to lump the ball in the box.
Yeah.
But this season they haven't done that. And then you just kind of get performances like this, I suppose, where, I mean, yes, it was bad and a lot of people were unhappy with the performance, but it wasn't just like endless crossing into the box. It was just, like I said, at half time, they've got the ball, but I don't really feel like they're knocking at the door. And I do think that's what happens. It's like,
it does not compute, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't compute. Everything that normally works for them. And the other thing you always hear from like 95% of Guardiola players is that, you know, he'll give you the solutions and he'll tell you what's going to happen. And it happens on the pitch. And that, you know, makes such a difference. And, you know, I spoke to a former player, not at City, recently, who was just saying about how, you know, his favourite manager was Brendan Rodgers, because what he would give you in terms of instructions was so clear. You knew exactly what you were going to do. It didn't confuse you or anything. And, you know, that really helps. But it just feels like when it doesn't come off, it doesn't click at all. And then I think maybe that combines then with the forward issue and the not being clinical, because I don't know, normally in a situation like this, you'd want somebody to stand up and be counted and like do something individually brilliant. But like, I don't know, like to get Sterling in behind, everything needs to click, doesn't it? You need to play that pass into like the attacking midfielder, and then Sterling makes the run in behind and you pass to him, and then he's in the clear then. But you need it to work. And when it doesn't work, there's like Sterling can't dribble past 3 players by himself. Like Mahrez, if he's probably better equipped to do that, but there is no kind of individualism in the team at the moment to be able to do that. And then it comes back to the finishing chances, because even when City could have gone, oh, that's a goal out of nothing. So when Foden came on and he turned on that shot, I thought it was going in. And I think the reaction of the bench was they were convinced that was going in. And if they'd have scored that, then they might have had something. But then there's the other ones where, you know, the Sterling chance where it was like would have been a half volley from like 6 yards out. And he just kind of...
Is that when Lindelof got a, it might, I like swung a leg at it and missed it?
Yeah, I think so. And then there was the header, which he just kind of, just like, it was just the header of somebody who's never headed the ball before. Like, it was just back towards the corner flag. And that's the obvious one where you think, well, if Haaland's playing, then he's banging that in, you know, or just fucking anyone who can head a ball, you know, a proper striker, somebody who would be in those areas. Then you've got the whole thing of the machine not quite ticking along perfectly, combined with the fact that there's nobody who can really do the individual moments of brilliance because the conversion's poor. So De Bruyne would maybe be one you'd expect, but his big chance conversion is like 27%, which is basically half of what average is. Even like Vardy seems to be the benchmark last few seasons. Vardy gets loads of goals. His conversion, big chance conversion rate, is always about 50%. And I think that's probably about right. And to be fair to Jesus this year in the Premier League, it's better than last season. It's 44%. But Sterling's has got worse. I've just got the Match of the Day highlight on. They didn't even show that Sterling header. And that's a chance. Like, that was a big chance. They didn't even show it because he made it look so bad. So, yeah, you've got the thing of it not clicking and then just players just not able to take the chances when they do come along. And chances that might come along out of nothing when you know, you go and grab the ball out of the back of the net and you carry it back to the centre circle and the other team starts thinking, oh, hold on. And that something might come from that. So I know it's a long-worded answer and I know I'm rambling a bit for a change, but that's the only reason I can think in this City team why it doesn't happen.
I put it down to that, again, turning deficits around and kind of bringing it back around to that point. I kind of agree with you, and I put it down to the, I can't remember who said it the first time, but I really like the phrase. It's the phrase is, all penguins are birds, but not all birds are penguins. And so when City are playing badly, you know, they usually go behind. But when City go behind, they're not always playing badly. And in this instance on Sunday, they were playing badly and they went behind. And so it was a no hope of getting back in front. You take a game like Real Madrid, for instance, last season. City were playing pretty well in that game when they fell behind. And so it was a case of, right, OK, well, we keep going, we're doing what we're doing and it will work. And in the end, it worked. And so, as you say, when things aren't going and you can't get Sterling in behind because the passes aren't off and the machine isn't quite working and somebody isn't quite where they should be, and you know what I mean? The passes don't quite hit the target and players have to move in places. Or I mean, there was a couple of examples. I think when Foden came on, he got the ball on the left-hand side and he rolled a pass in behind Wan-Bissaka and was fully expecting somebody to just make that run to the byline in behind. And then he looked up and everybody was on the far side of the pitch. It's like, well, there should be someone making that run in there, because that's what a Guardiola setup is. You don't need to know, you don't need to look up to see where the players are going to be. You know where they're going to be because that's what they always do. And then you kind of bring it back round to, like, City are playing badly. They then say, okay, we need to get back into this game. What do we do? Well, we keep doing what we always do, because that always works. And then when it doesn't work, you go, well, okay, so what do we do now? And the answer always seems to come back around to, well, we do what we know works, even though it's not working. And it just kind of feels like it'll just go on and on and on forever. And like you say, you get a week's added time and they're never going to score.
It's okay to talk about this game in isolation and, you know, this trend of 2-0 down. I'm always wary of blowing things up. And obviously, look, after 21 wins, everybody knows it's not the biggest of issues, but it's not like one of those City games where, you know, for want of a better phrase, they won the XG. You know, it's not one of those games where they have loads of chances and you go, look, it's just one of those things that happens.
So sometimes you can play really well and the ball just will not bounce where you need it to bounce.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if they'd been hitting the post and... everybody would have known if it was one of those games where they were unlucky and they tried everything. And yes, it hurts to lose to United, but at least it was just unlucky. But it wasn't one of those games. And like I say, you don't want to blow it up too much, and I'm not going to, but it does have hallmarks of, you know, all those ones I mentioned. And I'm going to say it because Guardiola says it, but it's that time of the year when everything's about the Champions League, isn't it? And in that big long answer that Guardiola gave about who deserves the credit for City being so good, he admitted again that he felt after the Gladbach game they're not ready to win the Champions League, which, you know, I kind of noted at the time. But then you think about it, you think, hold on, that can't be the case now in the fifth season. I mean, maybe it can. Maybe it's just not at a stage yet where the club are not ready. But surely to God, like, they are the best team in Europe at the moment.
Does the game on Sunday, though, not suggest that? Because all it takes in a knockout game is to throw in a performance like that and bang,
this is what I mean. Like, I don't want to go overboard on losing one game and say that they're not going to win the Champions League, because they, you know, they might not do this. And I do think they're much better equipped to deal with those mad bursts where they concede the goals and they're out. But obviously,
but they, I mean, they may also chuck in a run of performances in the Champions League, like the 21 games beforehand. So,
absolutely.
Like it's
that's why I'm not going overboard on it. But it's definitely like, well, store this away, because at the end of the day, as far as the Premier League's concerned, it doesn't matter, does it? Overall, like City are going to win the league, so it doesn't matter. And it's a bit like the 100-point season when obviously United won then in the April, but it didn't matter overall in terms of affecting the season. But if City go out of the Champions League in like April or May and the exact same thing happens again, then it's like, right, okay, it is a big thing now.
This is a thing.
And when is it going to happen? Because that thing of Guardiola saying, I got the feeling we might not be ready to win it, is like, when? And especially like, because the other teams this season are like comparatively weak. So like, if not now, then when? There's no point going into it now, because like I say, they might well win it. And there's no reason. Well, there's not too many reasons to believe that the one bad performance is going to be replicated. But it is definitely a bit of a worry. And like Leon, you don't need to say anything. Leon is just... it's just one singular word. It's one singular team, but everyone knows what you mean.
Everyone remembers knows the performance, the feeling,
the awful, awful misses, particularly the Sterling one, and just the stupid goals on the counter attack. Everyone knows what that means, and I do have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened again. But I'm not necessarily. I'm not too worried about it now. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did, basically.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at with it. And, City will be back to showing us how good they are very soon. And, you know, they've got, certainly plenty of opportunities to do that. And also, you know, some big games and interesting games over the next few weeks, you know, tactically diverse games coming up in the next month or so, you know, like Leicester away, Leeds at home, things like that. Obviously, Gladbach. Where we'll get to see the plenty of good things that they do, and we'll be back to talking about why they're so good and all this kind of stuff. But it's like when we talk about Jesus, you know, I wrote an article about him after he scored the winner against Sheffield United, but I wanted to, and we did the podcast, but I was like, I want to write it in a way that makes sense if he's played badly or if he's played well, and you can still read it regardless of what happens. And that is always, that's basically the situation. Jesus at this stage now is basically always going to be Jesus. And I do think there's the potential for Sterling to be more clinical and get more goals. But I don't know. It does look like Sterling is going to be Sterling. And that's his thing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
He's low-key had a bit of a bad season this season, hasn't he? It feels like he's had a step
up and down
from previous years.
Up and down. Like, I think he had a bad patch. I can't even pin it down. But look, he would have had a bad patch early in the season. But everyone did. Like,
yeah.
We can't talk about how it's a new city and everything was so poor and boring or whatever you want to call it early in the season, and then say, oh, well, Sterling's been... like, they've all, what, 90% of the team had a poor start of the season. And it's entirely understandable because, you know, we talked about the system not clicking in the odd game. The system wasn't really clicking. The system wasn't even the system early in the season. It was something completely different. As I've mentioned, you know, Gundogan being much further back. There's that. But then he was coming back into it a bit. But it's, after performances like yesterday, I don't know, it's the lack of a clinical edge. And like, he should never be able to take a penalty again. I know that's not relevant at the moment, but like, just, he should never be allowed near a penalty spot ever again. And again, you know, if City are in a penalty shootout, then God help us. Like, that's going to be mad. But anyway, yeah, if you're talking about Gundogan further back, I think the other big talking point everyone wants to talk about is De Bruyne. Is that where you were going?
Well, I was going to get to that in a second, but I just wanted to bring in just on the start of the season. Mike Cook on Twitter asked, Pep said when he started this run that he'd gone back to basics with wingers high and wide. So why has he gone back to the system that failed earlier in the season?
Yeah, so again, sorry, Mike, I've not had the opportunity to reply to the DMs. But I mean, it is interesting, and it's probably one of those questions now where you ask Pep after a defeat and he'll be arsey about it and say, well, no, blah, blah, blah. But there was definitely a time, even a couple of weeks ago, when they were winning, I was like, well, the inverted wingers have crept back in. And as Mike says, you know, the whole Pep, the big Pep thing that he was willing to admit about the turnaround was going back to wide wingers and getting back to their principles. But there were plenty of games in that winning run where that wasn't the case. I mean, the thing, you can have inverted wingers where they're still holding the width. But
I'm starting to wonder, you know, if because I said yesterday during the game that if I was going to take anybody off, I'd probably take Mahrez off, even though he'd been one of the better players.
Yeah.
Because I felt like United were very happy to sit in tight and just block everything that was coming at them. So they wanted to get some width on the pitch. And actually, in hindsight, it'd probably been better taking Sterling off and putting Foden on, someone who's left-footed on the left, even then keeping Mahrez right-footed on the right and just maybe inverting one side of the pitch.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I just like.
I mean, we get into the whole element of Pep subs as well, though, don't we? Like, obviously, everyone's saying, because I've written about the strikers today, and a few people are saying, well, just bring Aguero on. It's like, well, that's not a long term thing, obviously. But I kind of take the point. But I can't decide if it's one, Guardiola being weird with his subs, which I don't think it is actually, or Aguero just not being fully sharp. Whether you say fully fit or fully sharp. As I'm talking, I'm thinking it must be that, because as much as Guardiola can be a bit weird with his subs, and he waits, you know, he's not going to make changes at half time, is he? And he very rarely makes subs even before an hour. What he does do is like for like, and obviously we had the City quiz last week, and I think those answers will be on the app soon, so you can take the quiz even if you didn't join in. But I'll probably give one away. But the most subbed in player is it Jesus, and the most subbed out is Aguero.
Yeah.
Because what he will do is like for like, because I don't think he wants to change the structure, which is, you know, people can argue about, because times like yesterday, like,
but he
maybe
wants
to put him on the left and put Sterling on the right or something.
Yeah, but he maybe wants fresh legs and someone who's maybe on it that day or a bit sharper that day, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if Aguero is not playing well, then take him off and put Jesus on, and he might get you a goal, or vice versa. So I think that is one sub that Pep would make and does make. So I think it must be an Aguero not fully sharp thing. But people are also saying they don't think that all is well between them. But I think, I mean, I've not heard that. But also, if that was the case, I don't think Aguero would be on the bench at all.
Yeah.
And if he was being on the bench, I think I've said this before, if he was on the bench but not being used and he was pissed off with his treatment, I think we'd have heard about it. I think we know enough about Aguero's relationship with the media by now that if there is an issue, you'll hear about it. So I don't buy into that. I just think it's as simple as the fitness.
Yeah.
And I, as much as Guardiola's subs are hard to explain sometimes, I do think the like-for-like number nine change is one that he does do. And I think on the balance of things, he was probably thinking he's not sharp enough.
Yeah.
But God, like... Yeah, I mean, we all know that he needs to contribute, so it's not... I saw a comment, maybe in the Q&A, saying, like, would rather have a half-fit Aguero than Jesus any day of the week, but that's not how it works, is it, as far as Guardiola's concerned? You need to do everything else. So I was about to say, just put Aguero in the box for those chances that Sterling missed once Jesus had gone off, but not how it works, is it?
Yeah,
it
doesn't work.
Because, like, if Aguero doesn't do his job outside the box, then, you know, United might get a third or whatever. That'll be how Guardiola's thinking. But
yeah,
yeah, so there is that element of it. And then, yeah, De Bruyne.
Well, I was going to say, I was actually going to Mike's point, and then we're going to do De Bruyne. So let's get into that one now. Like, he was clearly having a bad game. There is also no doubt in my mind that, that Guardiola will look at that and go, yes, De Bruyne is playing particularly badly today, but he is still capable on a day like that of pulling off the pass that you need to send somebody clean through or to put it on a plate for somebody to tap in, and suddenly the game could turn on its head. So it's a very, very difficult decision to take. Yeah, to take a player like De Bruyne, even when playing badly, it's actually a very difficult decision to take him out and substitute him off when you're trying to change the game, and I get that. But all that being said, like-for-like changes, Bernardo didn't come on the pitch.
Yeah, I wonder if that's, I don't, like, this is just a devil's advocate kind of thing, but I wonder if that was a, I know it's like for like, but obviously they do play in very different ways. And I wonder if you bring him on, then you're playing a different, I don't know, because you would think the way that they're used to playing with Bernardo in recent weeks and how adaptable they are. You know, I think I mentioned recently about how Guardiola talked about a couple of seasons ago, he wanted them to be better at adapting to situations without him changing things or whatever. But you'd think they would be able to shift, even for half an hour, to a different style and, you know, playing the, just for shorthand's sake, playing Bernardo's way as opposed to De Bruyne's way. So it was a little odd. I mean, maybe, and this would maybe come down to bad management, maybe, but maybe there's an element to it of Bernardo being tired and needing a rest. And Guardiola planning to play De Bruyne in this game and giving Bernardo the 90 minutes off so he can be fit for other games. Now, people will probably be saying, well, why the hell would you do that? And yeah, maybe if that is the case, that might be bad management in hindsight, at least, because you could just say, well, you give Bernardo the rest earlier or later or whatever, and you don't plan to take him out of the team for a huge game against United.
Yeah, you do it. You do it for one of the upcoming games, Southampton midweek or something. Yeah,
exactly. So you could say that, but at the same time, I talked about hindsight there, and I was surprised that Bernardo didn't play at all. I'm very surprised, just because I thought even if he doesn't play him in midfield, to play him up front. I know Mahrez has been playing well, but you know, do him as false nine again or something. So I was surprised, but I did think, like, it's not mad to play Kevin De Bruyne in midfield. Like, I'm really surprised at the reaction to it. Like, I know Bernardo's been playing really well, but the whole point of my article the other week about the differences between the two of them is the bottom line is they still win. And I do get it, to be fair, and I think it's probably a bit more obvious now after the game. And to be fair, maybe the people who were making the point beforehand can feel vindicated now. But maybe De Bruyne just wasn't sharp enough and fit enough, and maybe Guardiola would have known that. But also, by the same token, I mean, surely if you're thinking rationally about it, he hadn't seen a problem with De Bruyne in training. Otherwise, surely he wouldn't have. I don't know. He wouldn't have taken that risk against United, because I think he took. We said he took a risk against West Ham, because I think he was probably thinking, well, if I make all these changes, you know, four or five players coming in and need minutes, four or five going out who need a rest,
they'll
be trying to get through the game. And if not, then okay, c'est la vie. We've got a big enough gap. It's fine. I don't think he would have taken a selection risk against United. I think that was the team he thought could win the game. I didn't really have a big problem with Cancelo and Zinchenko as opposed to Walker. Some people saying Fernandinho should have played, but I didn't see that at all. Obviously, Foden was the big element. But the points I've seen about Foden are, local lad, play him in the derby, he'll make the difference. But the obvious counter to that is, he played in the derby at Old Trafford last March, and City were awful.
Yeah.
Like, they're all awful. Like, you can't just chuck a local lad in and think it's going to be better. But in terms of playing Foden, he has been playing well. And I did wonder if, you know, he was being kept back for something, because when he missed the last couple of games, it was at the time when everyone else was kind of being rested and rotated. So it is a bit odd that he didn't play. But when he didn't start, I did think, well, Guardiola does trust Sterling implicitly, and he does do a lot of excellent stuff, even if his finishing is not great. Mahrez, I haven't got any complaints with starting Mahrez after how he's played recently. And the same with Jesus, really. I thought Jesus is probably the easiest one to drop. But having scored two the other night and done a lot of good work for the team, I didn't think it was outrageous that Foden didn't play. in my 11, I was asked for it on the Q&A, and I would have put him in, but I didn't think it was outrageous that he wasn't in. The only one I thought was a bit odd was Bernardo, but like I say, I don't think it was mad to trust De Bruyne.
If it comes back round to that De Bruyne is still finding his match fitness and not sharp enough, though, why is it okay for him to be doing that and not Aguero?
Yeah, I know. Well, and also...
That's another does not compute moment.
Yes, it is. And that is true. I mean, there may be an element of Aguero having, you know, a kind of lasting damage kind of thing rather than shake off a bit of rustiness. Maybe the more pertinent thing is there's a range of opinions in the Q&A and they're all basically saying the same thing, but obviously some are a bit more vociferous and a bit more never going to win the Champions League playing like this, and some are a bit more, well, you know, we just won 21 games, it's fine, it's not too much of a problem. But the one thing is there was a phrase that sounds quite heavy, but it does make sense, and kind of picking players on reputation. And it does feel like there's a bit of an element to that with De Bruyne. I mean, look, maybe it's just the case that Guardiola saw everyone in training and he saw De Bruyne playing well. But, like, I don't know. Like, on the evidence available to us, certainly, on the outside, just watching the games.
Still feels like he's feeling his way back in, doesn't it?
I would have to admit that even though I didn't really have a problem with going with De Bruyne because it's De Bruyne, that's probably me doing it on reputation as well, you know. Because I probably would have to admit that, yeah, Bernardo has been... You know, the team's obviously been really good with Bernardo. I maintain that it can be really good with De Bruyne, but when he's not playing well, as he has been recently, just because of, you know, coming back from injury. Go with the players that are performing and are ready. And if you need De Bruyne to play to get back into his rhythm, then, like I said about it being United, it's a big game, just... Don't take that chance. I mean, Guardiola must have thought that it, you know, all things being equal, it would be fine, and you know, there's not much of a difference between De Bruyne and Bernardo, and maybe it just so happened that De Bruyne had a stinker particularly early on. But look at this, look,
I honestly,
we've been talking now 40 minutes, and they give away a stupid penalty in the first minute.
Well, I've just seen. I was gonna bring this up quickly at the end as well, because I've just seen a photograph posted on Twitter by Stefan, who has just said, "I can't help but feel that this may have been an exaggeration of the danger." And it's a photograph of Rashford, Martial, just entering the City box, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players around him, and Jesus just clipping his heels, and it's just like, yeah, I think like he doesn't need to be there. It's a perfectly that they're perfectly set to deal with that.
He's overcompensating, isn't he? He's lost the ball early on. You know, he's kind of an emotional player. So yeah, I think he's overcompensating. He's tried to make up for it and made it worse, which footballers do that all the time. God, any level, yeah. We've all done it. Yeah, but Diaz was just kind of jockeying him and would have put his foot in, and he did that a couple of times with, you know, Stones was, they were both fine on the day, but Stones was better on the day. He was doubled up on for their goal because of the bad situation earlier at the pitch. So yeah, that's that. But yeah, Diaz, I think, was ready to handle it. And as you say, there is that picture of 5 or 6 players around Martial, but it was the first minute and they were thinking, God, we can't let this happen. And
yeah, it's a bit hammed, yeah.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
It's going to take a little bit of a sharp left now, Sam, because we've touched on Aguero. I just want to have a quick word on Laporta winning the Barcelona elections, because his comment in the build-up to the elections was that he wants to unite Messi and Aguero at club level. Obviously, I assume that means that he's not aiming to sell Messi to City, but rather bring Aguero to Barcelona.
I mean, I'll be able to find out soon enough. Well, hopefully soon enough. Because, you know, like I've always said, when we did the story about a year ago, February 2020, that City would sign Messi, that was, you know, kind of a surprise in itself. That was one of the first podcasts we did, I think.
I think it was, yeah.
I remember being in the studio in town talking about it and saying, look.
What was it, 4 days later they were banned from the Champions League?
Yeah, something like that. That was it. But I was like, look, you, as a journalist, you don't really want to be writing the story that City are going to try and sign Messi, because it just sounds too obvious and never going to happen. But the story is, if he's available, they will try. And that's quite telling, because he's older now. He's not quite the same player. And yeah, the assumption would be they wouldn't try, but obviously they would. But I think they will. Obviously, they will try if he's available. But I wonder now if that changes things a bit. I think I've already mentioned, it might not have been on this podcast, it might have been on another Athletic one, after City beat Liverpool. Earlier in the season, Messi was like toys out of the pram big time. And, you know, whenever, because Barca weren't playing well, and he was kind of in the dressing room like, oh, well, fuck, this is a load of bollocks. At least I'm leaving at the end of the season. I'm out of here, that kind of thing. And all the new players in the squad were like, is he always like this? Like, what's going on? But like recently, and God, I'll probably add the update 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was the case that he'd softened a bit. And I do think with Laporta being there, if he can, you know, work his magic a bit and make a few promises, and Messi thinks, I've only got a couple of years left. I do like living here. I don't want to move my whole family. And obviously the deal with City would probably involve a couple of years, 2 or 3 years in Manchester, and then, you know, part of it might be extra in New York. He might just think, no, not sure. I'd quite like my Barca lifestyle. So I'm a bit more down on the chances of it happening now Laporta's won.
But what about the Aguero the other way? That because I mean, like, I don't know how I feel about all this at the moment, because I want to see some more from Aguero still on the pitch, but I also don't want to let him go. You know what I mean?
The way I see it, if City are ready to let Aguero go, then it can only be because, well, I think 90% of it would be because his knee isn't right, or he's not been fit enough, because like City would, I'm sure, would love to keep him and love to do it properly and love, you know, hopefully with fans back in the stadium next year. And just as much as anything, would love for Aguero to score 25, 30 goals next season. But if they don't sign him, then it would mostly be because they feel he can't do it. So then that makes me think, why would any other top club think they could do that? It's like, especially like with Barca's kind of recent history of spending big money. Obviously, it wouldn't be big money to get him, but it would be big money wages. I wonder why Barca would do that. But again, to be fair, maybe that's the value. The value of him would be keeping Messi, and maybe they think, well, you know, this guy is still somebody who can contribute. So yeah, there is maybe that element to it. The only other element of it from City's point of view might be a really cold business decision where they're like, well, certainly a mixture of fitness, but also thinking, well, if we can get his wages off the books because he can't quite contribute the level we need, then we can really move forward with Haaland or whoever it may be. So maybe there's that element to it.
This is me knocking it into fifth gear now for the show, because EJ David on Twitter asked me, are City fans from a young generation becoming unable to see the difference with real life and a video game? I've woken up this morning and seen Haaland or bust, pay everything, etc. I don't think this is a reasonable thought process. Of course, I'd love Haaland to play, but it's going to be much more difficult than people assume. I'm worrying we as fans are starting to build up our expectations too much when we're buying players. If we don't get him and get Mbappe, people will be angry, and I don't think that's healthy.
Whoa. If they'll get him and get him, but fuck that. Like, I think it's time for City. Jesus Christ.
I think it's an either or, not a, you know what I mean? Oh. I don't think it's a both and people will be angry. I don't think the benchmark is that high, but you know
what I mean? No. I was saying, like, because I thought it was just going to go, and I was completely with him. I was 100%, because I've said this before, like, if people are, like, hanging all their hopes on Sterling Haaland, and the thing is, Chelsea will be having this conversation, Chelsea fans, sorry, United fans probably, I'm sure Real Madrid were probably thinking, this guy is going to solve all our issues. Bayern have strangely not been linked, but there's going to be four or five clubs, basically, who are probably thinking, or fans of those clubs, who are thinking Haaland's going to solve all our issues. And obviously, he can't go to all those clubs, and they're going to be devastated.
And let's be honest, Haaland probably has the choice, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be the case with City fans, 100%. Like, people are like, Haaland or bust. And this is why I completely understand. I was completely with that comment, that if City don't sign Haaland and they sign anybody else, people will be disappointed. Like, it will be like, oh, it'll be like people are chucking themselves out of Windows territory. Like, it'll be a disaster.
End of days.
People will be thinking it's a disaster if City don't sign Haaland, particularly if he goes to another Premier League club. But there's floating that idea in there that if they sign... Sorry, I just want to make sure I heard this right. If they sign Mbappe instead, people will
No. If they have a target like Haaland or Mbappe and don't get that target.
All right, fine. Yeah, sorry. That's why my reaction was so mad. I thought it said if they sign Mbappe instead. I was like, what? No, that would be the best. Like, it's not even the second prize. Like, between the two of them, it's fine. But yeah, I mean, Mbappe... David Ornstein was saying this morning that that's not going to happen because of the wages. We've mentioned that before, not so much with the wages specifically, but just it doesn't feel like Mbappe to City is ever going to be a thing, even though his kind of situation at PSG is the typical kind of City, you know, City entered the chat kind of situation, isn't it? You know, a great player's got 1 year left on his deal. Let's try and see what we can do here. But with Mbappe, that's just kind of just hands off, not happening. So yeah, Haaland's the main fella. And but yeah, okay, so fine, I misunderstood that. But I in that case, I do completely agree. Like, if City end up, I think Lukaku's getting a bit of a better reputation now. If City got him instead of Haaland, I think people would still be disappointed. If City didn't even get Lukaku as well as not getting Haaland, there would be a lot of people seriously kind of upset. I suppose it goes to show that Diaz wasn't first choice and he's been brilliant. So
yeah.
I did put a paragraph in my article from the game. You know, Diaz goes to show that it doesn't necessarily mean disaster if you don't get your first target or even your second. But it does feel this summer that City need to... I talked about Dynasty at the weekend and how it's not going to happen, but it does feel like, you know, when it comes to Aguero's replacement or whatever it may be, this feels like one they need to do properly, and they do know that. They do know that. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But
I saw also David Ornstein touching on the Raiola stuff as well about it not being ideal, but them willing to go with it.
Yeah, well, I put that. Well, yeah, but I put that in mind as well. It was funny because my boss was like, "Oh, are we going to do about the striker?" I was like, "Yeah, I think it's the best thing." He was like, "Oh, and he's doing something in his column about the striker, but that's fine." And I was like, well, "What's he doing?" He was like, "I just said a couple of points." And then just as I was right in mind, he'd sent over the full thing that was going to be in it. And it mentioned about Alfie Haaland. And I was like, oh, I've just literally just written that in my piece as well. So like Alfie Haaland is kind of as influential, if not more so, as Mino Raiola. And like City would just, like, I don't know if they have been or will. I'm guessing by the timeline and a couple of rumours have been, because, you know, City aren't just going to wait until June the 1st to sign Haaland, are they?
They'll be doing they'll be putting the feelers out now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, I can't say for certain that they have been dealing with Alfie, but as part of whatever City's attempts to sign Haaland are, they will be talking with him. And as I've said in the past as well, I think I did an article on Cheeky Pagirisign last year in lockdown, and I think I just mentioned just as an aside, you know, as much as... So Guardiola's got a problem with Raiola, and they've had that, you know, public thing. You know, Cheeky Pagirisign gets on with everyone basically because he has to, like, it's his job, and he gets on with Raiola and it's fine. I know that when it came to signing De Ligt, they did decide in the end not to go with Raiola, but I think all things considered, like I said, it just feels like this time when it comes to replacing Aguero and with Haaland, it's not just any old signing, is it? It's just get it done and sort yourselves out for the next few years as far as the striker situation is concerned.
This has just popped to me now that since you were talking about Alfie Haaland being influential, as the stuff over the weekend about the Keane tackle in 2001 and all that sort of stuff, was that solely from that David Bernstein interview, or was there a kind of a little bit more of City showing support for Haaland there? Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of like a nice thing to if you show a bit of support, a bit of love, it might help kind of. What was it? Butter the toast? That's not even a phrase, but you know.
No, but it makes sense though. It's that works. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't say for sure. I don't think it would be beyond them to kind of maybe suggest. No, I don't know. I'm not sure. But the other thing with that is United were close to signing Haaland before he went to Dortmund, and I don't remember there ever being a he can't sign for this club because of what happened with his dad kind of narrative. So I mean, it might be the case, but it would be odd that.
If it would be odd now, City, not
yeah, last year. Yeah, it's like if you were to choose City, I'm sure there'd be tweets and memes about, you know, this all happened because Roy Keane ended his dad's career. I don't know if that necessarily would be the case, but yeah, you might be right. There might be a kind of a way just to show that you've got City roots, kid. Yeah. But he knows, obviously, you know, there's that picture of him. He was at the Carabao Cup final a few years ago.
Yeah, and he's got there's that photograph in his City shirt as well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he was in a City supporters club on Facebook in Norway, I think, until about a year or so ago, because people just kept asking him when he's going to join City. So he left. But he obviously has got ties to the club. But that is good. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, the players want a good sporting project. As well as the emotional ties, like players grow up supporting teams but don't sign for them because it doesn't necessarily make sense. But if we're looking at it even just objectively, like Haaland grows up with a City connection, and like genuinely the sporting project is, I would just say this because I watch City every week, and there's a tendency just to say the team you watch every week is the best, but in terms of the sporting project, I don't think anybody could offer them more than City. Like, you've got Guardiola for a couple of years, at least. Position of strength. You're going to have a hatful of chances. There's no kind of, if we sign, you know, Real Madrid might say, well, we'll sign you and we'll sign him and we'll sign him and, you know, we should be better. City can just say, well, we'll sign you and look, we're already doing this.
Yeah. Look at the chances we create for you.
Exactly. Look, I'm sure they wouldn't do this, but they could just show him the chances that Jesus and Sterling miss and say, look what you'll be getting. And they don't need to say, oh, well, we'll buy him and we'll buy him and we'll buy him. They'll just say, well, you just come and join, and it's all set up for you. So, City have got a good chance, but you never know. Like, and also, they don't often get their first targets, do they, City? So we'll have to see how it happens. And I know this has been a bit of a weird podcast talking about all the, why aren't they good at this and why aren't they good at that and what can they do to sort it out? But I'm sure next week we'll be talking about probably Bernardo Silva in midfield again and whatever else, Gundogan scoring, whatever it may be. So
back to winning ways.
Yeah, exactly. Plenty of the season to go. And like I said last week, I know like it's a different vibe now, but just like enjoy it. It's a good time, isn't it? So
yeah. Well, that brings us to an end for this week's Wire with Us. I'm David Mooney. Thanks as ever to Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
You can sign up for The Athletic right now for £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.